Okay. I'm ready too.
Excellent. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Funbox Monster. Not that. No, it's the Coast City Comics Corn Club. It's the Corn. It's the Corn Palace Coast. I got this.
It's the Coast City Corn Huskers, and we're here talking husks.
This is such an easy thing. Literally, okay. Coast City Comics. Those are the first three words. Coast City Comics, yep. Club. The last word is club, and I got it, and we're all set, and that is a take, and we are going. Because
it's
we're
like
talking
the Burger King Kids Club.
This phone is going to run out of juice pretty soon, and it's going to be right in the middle of this thing. So let's do it.
Plug it in.
Unfortunately, the headphones are plugged into where it needs to be plugged in, so...
Oh, geez. Thanks, Apple.
Bought. I know. Thanks so much for that. Anyway, so today we're going to be doing the Marvel. What is the name of this? This is a Marvel team up.
Marvel team up number 14. This came out in 2005.
Yes, and this is the Invincible Spider-Man team up.
Yes,
that is done by the Invincible team. It was just Kirkman and Corey Walker just came right over and did just a Marvel story, which is really awesome.
Yeah, see, Corey Walker was the first artist on Invincible, and he only did, I think he did like the first 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got too much.
Yeah.
And then that was when Ryan Otley took over, and he did pretty much the rest of the book. It was very similar to the Walking Dead situation.
Yeah. It's too bad because, I mean, I love Otley and I love what he did with, I mean, he was the perfect replacement, but I also really like Corey Walker quite a bit. I enjoy his artwork. I will say that I like his artwork a lot, and I did not think this was a spectacular example of his artwork, unfortunately.
It's not, and I'm actually not, I'm not as big a fan of Corey Walker, actually.
I mean, listen, Otley is amazing. And also, if you're an Invincible fan, you've seen a lot more Ryan Otley than you've seen Corey Walker.
It's more his book than Walker's, for sure.
Well, I mean, he did 120 issues as opposed to 15, which, you know, that's right. A big deal. But, I mean, but there is something to be said for all the character design and the universe and everything that was set forward by him, especially mm-hmm. because... At least according to Kirkman, Corey Walker has been working on the book since the beginning all the way through.
Right.
He has been behind the scenes doing character designs and doing setups and things like that. And he's not doing art for the book, but he is definitely working on the book. So
okay.
I think that's cool. I mean, that could be just kind of like a, hey, buddy. Here's a little present, but they hired him for the new Invincible TV series. He's the full-on character designer for all the stuff in the TV show. So,
which sounds like they're putting a lot of weight behind it.
Jesus. Yeah, the lineup of voice actors is insane. I'm excited.
Yeah. It's going to be wild. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it can't go wrong. It's Invincible. I'm very excited. But yeah, so this issue, what a weird thing.
It's very weird.
Why did you choose this? I think I know the answer to this question.
Well, I think I've been looking for... I hadn't picked Spider-Man yet, which I think you probably was surprised that I haven't picked one yet.
True.
And I was just laying in bed being like, what would be a weird one to pick? And I was like, oh yeah, that Invincible crossover was actually just a weird issue.
Yeah. You're right.
Because one, it was an Image Marvel crossover, which I actually did some research into it because I couldn't remember one before this.
Mm.
And yeah, good luck. It takes.
I know they have done them before. I know there was like a Witchblade X-Men crossover, and like they've done.
There was a Wildcats X-Men book.
Yep.
Back in the late 90s, there was a Deathblow Wolverine.
Yep.
And then there was a Team X and Team 7. And Team X was like Wolverine and Sabretooth's group before they became supervillain heroes.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay.
Yeah, and like that was all I could find, because it looks like Image like was spent most of their time doing crossovers with DC.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, yeah.
So it's very weird.
It was definitely a surprise at the time, and the fact that it figures into the timeline of Invincible is awesome. Like, that's,
yes, this is 100% canon in the Invincible universe.
Yeah, it's just this weird little world that I visited where there's a guy dressed up like a spider. What a weird place. And he just spent an afternoon there, and that's fucking cool. I like, that's the kind of old school comic book nerdery where it's like, we got to fit this into continuity, and it's got to, you know, it's got to jive with all this stuff. I love that stuff. It's adorable, and it's like, it's just the kind of thing that makes you love comics.
Yeah, I feel like it's so shoehorned in that I feel like it was a last minute decision.
And also, the art makes me feel that way too.
Exactly, because I feel like there's definitely, it's like some real rush panels.
No, absolutely.
And like, there's even some that are they're just like out of resolution too.
Yeah.
Like, as you're going through it. And it's like, geez, like, because as you mentioned, like, when Corey Walker's on, like, his stuff is good.
Oh.
I'm not a big a fan of him as Ryan Ottley, and that's fine. He's still very talented. But like you said, this book did not showcase everything that Corey Walker could do, which is a bummer, because it was probably his biggest Marvel book that he did.
And
I, you know, where he got to draw Spider-Man.
I wish I knew more about the process that went for how they made these books back in this day. This was that this was that window in time at Marvel when they were forcing artists to do things in. So Marvel always had their house style in big air quotes. And in this, they have their ultimate house style. And it was a computer inked, like, very specific look where everything was kind of like a lot slicker, like the ink lines were a lot slicker, like this whole thing looks like it was done early computer inking. I don't know that for a fact, but that definitely, it looks like it's a Photoshop job. And
it was 2005 when it came out, so yeah. Think about that. Think about where your Photoshop was at in 2005.
Not great. I mean, yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. So it is weird that they were doing that, but like that whole line, which honestly I thought overall looked great, the Ultimate Spider-Man, all the Ultimates that were going on at that time, I thought looked cool, but definitely when they had their, like, we're throwing something out fast, they looked like this. Where it was a really, like, just bare basic minimalist line style that looked like what happens when you take a more complicated drawing and you put it into Illustrator, you know, and you're like, vectorize now, boop, and you just hit, you know, you hit line art and it just goes, and you know, that comes out.
Yeah,
that's what this looks like to me. And I mean, I do not have even the slightest clue how they worked on this stuff, but that's my view of what I'm seeing. And again, yeah. I like Corey Walker's art normally, and there are times his Spider-Man is awesome, and it is like when it's drawn right, it looks really cool, but the rest of the time it looks so rushed.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in this one that kind of got me. Like, there's a lot of times where they have close-ups on people's faces, and there's just no line detail in the nose.
Nothing.
But the colorist spent so much time trying to put in colors to define where the nose was.
Yeah.
You know, like, things like that. Or, like, the panel. You know what we should do? How about we tell people what happened?
Sure. I mean, we can get there. We can get there eventually, okay. But I will say the other thing about this that, like, before we even talk plot, I think the interesting part about this is I think this is from that time when colorists were still getting paid what they were in the 80s and 90s, and they were doing 10 times the work, and it was that transitional period when they were like, well, no, just shove it over onto the colorist because they get paid $15 a page. You know, because back in 1984, you know, you took a Prismacolor marker and you were like, bip, 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 boop, boop, bop. And then that's that for, you know, 10 minutes of work for a page or whatever. I'm probably right. massively underselling it. I apologize to all colorists. But I mean, eventually it got to the point where colorists were doing the lion's share of the work and getting paid like they were, you know, like it was taking them 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's this is the example of that, where they're just like, no, just let him do it. They'll do all the backgrounds. They'll do everything. Just let the colorist take care of it. And it kind of failed. But so
it was brutal in parts.
So I'll let you give the breakdown.
All right. So there's two stories to consider here. We'll start with the Spider-Man story because that's the simplest. Spider-Man is fighting Doc Ock. Very classic encounter. He's making a lot of cracks about Doc's stamina.
Oh my god.
Which I found kind of...
This is so fucking like, Robert Kirkman. There's so many dick jokes like, right out of the gate that are like, how did you... You got Spider-Man and your first thing was like, I want to make sure Spider-Man's making a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and I'm sure that's
is
what...
Spider-Man?
How concerned about Doc Ock's penis is he? Like, really considerably concerned in this issue.
He's worried. Well, he's very worried.
He's also like,
impressed.
Like, turned on. There's a moment when he says, "Oh, let's see how you do in the dark." Right after he says a bunch of things about his performance and his like and being able to get it up. And it's like, hold on, dude. You are this is an old ass man.
Just dial it back, Spidey. Yeah. Just dial it back.
The sexual harassment needs to back down a bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you know what? It was 2005. It's a product of its time.
I don't think that's true.
No, it doesn't. It means nothing. So then at this point, they're fighting. A portal opens up in the background, and Image Hero, Invincible, comes shooting out of it. So if you need some background on why that would happen, in the Invincible comics at that time, there was a villain named Angstrom Levy who had figured out how to open portals between basically the multiverse of any universe. And he's been throwing Invincible into different universes in hopes to weaken him enough in order to be able to kill him. The problem is that Invincible is basically...
Invincible?
Invincible... Well, Invincible's always been like a combination of like Superman and Goku from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
And if you imagine those two things together, like you're not killing them. Not anytime soon or ever. So it's like it's basically and they say that in the book. He's like, it's not working. He's not wearing me out. It's not going to happen. And I just don't know what he's going to do when he gets desperate. Yeah. But yeah, so that's how Invincible gets here. And this is 100% canon in the Invincible universe. As I mentioned already, because when this picks back up in Invincible number 33, he comes through the portal and Mark has the webbing on his back.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they managed to maintain that. Very similar to the when the Spawn-Batman crossover, where Spawn got the Batarang in the face and then the issues afterwards, he had his face sewn together.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Man.
So it seems like an Image crossovers matter.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that was always the idea of all of the Image books with their superheroes, was that they were trying to make things matter more than they did at Marvel and DC, where things seemed to just kind of come and go, and you could be like, you're dead one day, you're alive the next day. And in these, they were trying to make them a little more realistic, you know, as much as you can do with things like Spawn and Invincible. And I mean, Invincible, the whole point is essentially like, this is like an elevator pitch for what if Superman was in the real world, essentially. It's like all the things that happen with Invincible are these things that you're like, oh yeah, wouldn't that have happened? Like, you know, one of the classic confrontations in Invincible, one of the most amazing moments that he references here, is obviously one of his first supervillain fights. He goes out and there's a dude who's basically, this is a big spoiler for Invincible, I'm sorry to anybody who hasn't read it, but it's essentially fine. We get like this big supervillain type who comes out and he's like, I'm X, Y, and Z and no one can defeat me and I'm going to take over the world and all these things and I have all these superpowers and whatever. Mark goes out and just explodes his head like a grape in a supermarket. And it's like, and he just sits there covered in purple goo from this guy's brains and guts. And he's like crying. He's like, he said he was super powered and that no one could defeat him. Oh God, what have I done? You know, and it's that like, oh shit, this is what happens when you are at that insane level that they have built up Superman to be. And
right.
Where if you're moving planets, it's going to be tough for you to make a cup of tea, you know?
Right. You're always a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
But they also established a great thing in Invincible too. And we're probably just going to talk about Invincible a lot here, so because Invincible is amazing and you should read the whole thing.
Yes, you should. And we have all the trades listed on our website right now at coastcitycomics.com. Woo! Sorry.
Bye.
No, that's it. Go on.
Mark Invincible also spent a great deal of time just talking to them.
Yeah.
Which I felt was kind of like a Wally West 90s trait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where just bad guys are showing up being like, I'm going to trash this place and I'm going to kill everybody. And he'd be like, dude, why? You know? But like, you've seen me punch people into dust, like literally like just turn them into mist. Like when I punch them, how about we just don't do this? You know, like,
yeah,
I could get you a job with the government. Like we could just go our separate ways and no one has to get hurt.
Right. And that was another,
that
was a great Spider-Man issue as well. That did a very similar thing.
Yeah.
There was the guy with the magnet boots who basically had the gravity defying shoes. And he was like, oh, I'm a 3-time loser. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm going to lose my family no matter what. I've got to go break into this bank and I'm going to get money because it's my last chance. And basically Peter Parker stops him on the street and he's like, dude, don't. You have the brains to make fucking anti-gravity boots. You could be doing something real with your life instead of robbing banks.
Right.
Which is something that prior to this had kind of never come up in comics, which obviously seems like the number one thing that would come up when you're like, I've, you know, built this massive spaceship that can do things that no one has ever seen before. And I'm going to use it to blow up the Washington Monument. And it's like, why not just sell it? It's worth more than anything you could, you know, like... The Earth's governments would pay you as much as you're trying to ransom them for. And so all of that, I liked that moment with Spider-Man. And there are a lot of those moments with Invincible, too.
It reminds me of the Spider-Man Sauron moment where Spider-Man reminds Sauron that the technology he's using could cure any type of cancer in the world. And he goes, I don't want to cure cancer. I want to turn people into dinosaurs.
I want to make dinosaur people. And, you know,
yeah.
Can you blame
him? Best moment in comics ever.
That was a really good moment.
Where it's like, shut up. I know what I'm doing.
That was Spider-Man and the X-Men number 5, I think. I think I actually know that number.
Yeah, we will absolutely do that one in the future.
That one's very, fantastic. Very good. It was... Spider-Man and the X-Men was better than people gave it credit for. It was only not as good as Wolverine and the X-Men, and so I think that's why people didn't love on it the way that they probably should have. And good luck being...
It was a mini, too, wasn't it?
What's that?
Spider-Man and the X-Men was a mini, too, right?
Yeah, it was like 6 issues. I think it was I think it was one of those Marvel things where it was like, it's an ongoing, sales are low, it's a mini-series.
It was fun though.
Yeah,
it was really goofy.
It's goofy and super fun. So was Wolverine and the X-Men, and that is literally one of my favorite comics of all time. That whole run of Wolverine and the X-Men, basically up to like issue 25. But like,
is my favorite X-Men.
That is some solid, fun, funny comics crap. That's just like, you don't get it anywhere else. So yeah,
absolutely.
And that's and Invincible is another example of that, except. It has all the fun, funny stuff, except it also has that Buffy the Vampire Slayer element where it's like, everything's fun and funny, and then here's our drama moment where we're going to talk about our relationship and all of the terrible things that are happening in the world, and there's a war on and all this other shit, and it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, God. But it does keep you going.
And then there's intestines everywhere. Like, it's the goriest thing possible, too.
It's like... In a lot of cases, it's like Silver Age Superman and then guts. Love it.
Yeah. It's absolutely brutal, which is where they kind of pick up here to go back to the story.
Yeah.
Because Invincible knocks Doc Ock loopy.
Yes.
A couple of times. And Spider-Man's like, whoa, dude, like, you need to pump the brakes. Like, yeah. That's just a guy with octopus arms. And he's like, oh, sorry.
He said he had superpowers.
Because he could have turned him into
pudding. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he basically only didn't because he put the arms in front of him. So the arms absorbed the blow instead of his face.
But you know what I thought was interesting about that was when they end up fighting him a couple times. And when they go back, that's when Spider-Man Invincible, when they first show up, being like, hey, man, you sound kind of crazy. You should go see a doctor or something because of all the hits you've been taking.
Yes.
Which is funny because that's kind of foreshadowing to Superior Spider-Man and the World's End story, where they realize that Dr. Ock's been hit in the head too many times by the Hulk, and he's just a normal person.
Yeah.
And so he's obviously dying.
I mean, those are the problems with superhero stuff, that it's nice that you can just separate yourself far enough that you're like, yeah, Dr. Octopus is fighting the Hulk. Sure, the Hulk can crush a mountain or hold up 750,000 tons or whatever it was he did in Secret Wars. And yeah, sure, that works. And also, he can punch Doc Ock in the face, and he's just a dude, and he'll just walk it off eventually. You know what? Comics are fucking fun. That's why they're so goddamn fun.
It sure is. Hey, no complaints here.
Yeah.
No complaints here. So Spidey and Invincible, they have a heart-to-heart on the roof. They basically compare origin stories, realize they're actually pretty similar. They make fun of each other's names and costumes. It's a delight.
Yes, it is.
And then Spidey takes him over to Avengers Tower, and I'm going to bring this up for the art moment again, because this was definitely one of those moments where I was just like, boy, this is rushed. Because he's just like, oh, let's go to Avengers Tower. And he's like, oh, what's Avengers Tower? And then they cut to this panel, and it is the most non-impressive picture of a tower.
It's so sad.
But Invincible tries to sell it.
He does.
Bless his heart.
But also, it's like they go to this tower. There's nothing on the tower. And then they're like, he walks in and he's like, how is everybody doing? And all of his webs disappear off his costume. And then, like, the walls of this, like, $20 trillion tower are bare. It's just
nothing. Steel
gray everywhere you look. Are there even panels? Like, are there even tiles on the floor? No. There is one strip of, like, safety tape across the back wall. It looks... It's so boring. It's really sad. It's really too bad.
There's not even a plant.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's sad because he clearly took all of his time drawing Mary Jane's ass, which feels a little weird.
Well, she is Adam Eve.
Yeah.
Invincible's girlfriend. Like, the way she's drawn, she's got the earrings, the outfit, the whole nine yards, is just like, that is Adam Eve. You did not even, I mean, it was probably intentional, I'm assuming, but if it wasn't,
maybe,
then sir, you did not even try.
No, you didn't try in the least. Same color scheme, same everything, every single thing.
Yeah.
But again, like, I hate seeing the moments when the webs disappear. It's like, it's so bad. It's so
it happens
quick.
A lot.
It happens so much. And like,
there'll just be random panels where he's just all of a sudden there's no webs, but he's also like very wide.
Yeah,
I noticed that too. Sometimes. Like, Spider-Man and Invincible put on weight like judiciously throughout, and then lose it immediately. It's very interesting.
When they go into Avengers Tower, they eventually get a little splash page where they get to actually meet the Avengers, and we actually see all of the Avengers standing together, which is only very, 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 very quickly. And we get Spider-Woman, and clearly the colorist was told to give her an ass, because his lines end, and then the colorist has a very, very detailed shading on two ass cheeks. I feel like... Basically, the asses in this book get the most care of anything else in it. It's like they took more time for the asses than literally the rest of the book. But that's okay. Again, I love this book.
And the line work on Iron Man's armor.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like out of all the times he skipped out on drawing in the webs, I think it's because he was busy working on Iron Man's armor. Because this is like the so heavily layered version of his armor, not the sleek down modern version we have now.
Yeah, it is. And that's probably why they only show him once per page.
Oof.
Man, yeah. There's some stuff in here. I mean, it's got a lot of that Kirkman like banter. It's pretty crisp banter, but it also verges on being kind of jocular. There's definitely moments when you're like, "Ugh, dude, go back to the sports bar." But, you know, but he is so good that it doesn't come off that way the whole time. There's only a few moments where I'm like, "Ugh, dude, back down." But, you know, I still love it. So
we do get a funny moment when he meets the rest of the Avengers, though. Where, because before he was making fun of Spider-Man for having just the name of Spider-Man, where he also ends up making fun of Superman in the process of just saying that his name was lazy.
Yes.
And then without talking to anybody on the Avengers team, he just immediately goes, "If I understand this universe correctly, then this is how you guys must have your names." So he calls Iron Man Robot Man.
Yep.
Which is a character from Invincible.
Yes.
Wolverine is Claw Man. Captain America is Flag Man.
Yes.
The Sentry is Fabio Man. Yes. Spider-Woman he just calls Batwoman.
Yep.
And then Luke Cage. This one. He just calls him Black Man.
Yeah, which is so reductive that you would think that Luke Cage would try to punch him. But he just kind of goes, "You know what? I don't need any of this interdimensional nonsense. I think I'm just going to walk away from this one," which I totally get.
He really takes it in stride. Yeah. He really does.
He's just like, "Listen, I've lived in the 1970s. You think this is bad? You think that's reductive? Oh, you should have seen fucking Heroes for Hire. Woof. I was written by white guys for years."
So I mean, let's be better, Mark.
Yeah, Mark. Be better. Okay. Mark, be better. That's it.
Come on, man. Jeez Louise.
So Mark carries Spider-Man around by his armpits until Spider-Man finally gets sick of it, and makes himself a little harness, like a little baby Bjorn, that he gets carried by. Because he finds the armpit carry to be too insulting, I guess.
I would imagine it's uncomfortable, too.
It probably, yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
Who knows what's uncomfortable to somebody who's routinely thrown through brick walls? But...
That's fair.
That's always the question. But, okay, so he comes... So Doc Ock comes back after being totally fucking beaten to crap. And he's kind of holding a limp, useless arm with one of his arms. It looks like it's, like, either out of its socket or one of them's broken. But he's also...
Oh, it's Hamburger.
Yeah, I think one of those arms is totally Hamburger. And now he's got a yacht up over his head with his tentacles, and he's threatening people down by the pier. That's fun.
What's the name of this boat? I'm looking at it right now.
The Ugly Bug. Ugly Bug. The Ugly Bug is the name of the boat.
And there's... Who names a boat that?
I don't know. What is his goal here? What is the? I love the idea that he's just fucking shit up. There doesn't seem to be any kind of plan to what he's doing.
Yeah, so from what I read, like, here, he basically says that if I cause enough trouble, I knew you guys would show up, because basically he was looking to get his ass beat. That's what I'm saying.
Right. I mean, that is the Dr. Octopus thing, though, is that what they explored in, like, Superior Spider-Man and all those things, is that his ego is so insane that he refuses to back down from even something like this, where clearly he's going to turn into pudding eventually, and he doesn't.
He's just beaten the crap at this point. Nothing matters to him.
Right, and so eventually, I mean, we just get Mark just kind of taking him out, just pretty much jumping at him. And then he finally gets tired of dealing with him and trying to not have to, you know, trying to fight him without killing him. So he just rips his arms off, or his robotic arms. And, yeah. And that's kind of the end of
that,
it.
That also goes back to another theme in Invincible, is that sometimes Mark just loses it. Because these guys, because they know how indestructible he is, and they keep trying to push him and push him and push him, and then eventually he's just like, God, fuck this. You know, he's just, and then he just throws a guy into the sun, or he just rips the robot's arms off, and he's like, that's it, we're done. We're over. Okay, you know.
Yep. Sometimes you need to throw a guy into the sun.
Or fly through a planet.
That's just how it goes.
Later issues.
Yeah. There's so many moments of Invincible that are so Walking Dead. And those tend to be the ones that I don't like. I will admit. There are a couple of fates. I mean, it's so far down the road that I don't want to spoil any of the things that happen in later issues of Invincible. But there are a couple of main characters that you grow to like that have very Walking Dead endings to their lives, where you're like, this is like, it's straight up like issue 100 of Walking Dead all over again.
I do.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. You know, the at least two of the ones that I'm talking about, and they are really rough. They're rough in a way that is like, I don't know if I like this book as much as I did before I read this issue. You know what I mean? And that's how I feel about the two main characters that were killed off in very cruel and unusual ways. I was like, I think that's too much. I think that goes overboard for me, and it tarnishes my love of the series. I mean, I know that that's not everybody, and just pushing the envelope is what Kirkman does. He always wants to go to he wants to get as far over without losing you as he can. And I think in that he does tend to lose.
He definitely lost me on The Walking Dead for sure, to the point where I was just like, this is like, who's that guy that does those movies where like,
yeah, it was issue 100.
Where the people just ended up in the jungle and they were just getting eaten. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, like stuff
like
that.
Cannibal Holocaust.
Eli Roth. Yeah,
so
Eli Roth stuff where I'm just like, okay, you know, just like, just because you can doesn't mean you always should.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's basically my biggest problem with Kirkman. I think also he's so talented that it's almost disappointing. And I feel like I don't ever talk about how talented Kirkman is, because it's one of those things where it's like, yes, he is. Fuck. You know, like when he just wants to write something that's like, here, throw him a Marvel character and see what he does with it. It's like that Destroyer miniseries was so fucking amazing. And it's just like,
right.
Yeah. And that was amazing. I loved that too. And when he did his spin-off of Walking Dead, which is still one of my favorite comics of all time that nobody talks about, Science Dog. Oh my God. Like that was a perfect example of something where you could have gone fluffy and pointless and like, who gives a shit? It'll just be a little romp about this. You know, it could be a Silver Age, Tom Strong, fun thing with a dog. Sure. And then he turned it into this fucking emotional roller coaster tearjerker book that scarred me. I mean, that was sad as shit. And it's a book called Science Dog that's based on a t-shirt that a little kid wore in one of his other comics. Nuts. But still, I love that book. And I don't even know if that's still in print. I need to find out. Ah, it's a shame. If it isn't, it is a shame, because that was a wonderful piece of art. And that was done by Cory Walker as well.
I think so. Yeah, because that was Mark's favorite comic too, in Invincible.
Oh, nice. Right. Is the, oh, that's how they tied the universes together.
Like an Invincible Science Dog crossover for like a hot minute, if I remember correctly.
That's awesome. Did they ever cross
Super Dinosaur ever took off enough for them to do that. Which is too bad, because like that's another one like we were talking about before with Monsters Unleashed. Just being like, Super Dinosaur should have been a TV show. Like, I don't get what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
It is. It did get made into a TV show. Yeah, Netflix has it.
Is that what I'm hearing?
It's weird. I watched it, and I think it's probably something that a little kid would go nuts for. I think it definitely got buried in the, like, just, like, so much content that nobody ever saw it. I mean, it still exists out there in the world, but it was also, it was a little aggressively tuned up for a video game little kid audience. It, like, all of the fun things about the comic that I really loved about Super Dinosaur, that kind of got lost in the translation, and it got really, like, sugar cerealed up somehow. Okay. Like, it's really spastic, which I'm sure kids fucking love, but as far as why I was like, as an adult reading a kid's comic that was written by Kirkman, why I loved it, all that
That's
stuff kind of went by the wayside, because
that concept's got great legs.
I mean, yes, and cool, and just such a cool design. I mean, the idea of the little tiny T-Rex arms operating joysticks that have big, beefy robot arms is just, I mean, that is all you need. That concept, just go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is gravy.
So we're at the ending now. Invincible, another portal opens up. Invincible takes off through it. Spider-Man tries to hitch a ride, and he can't make it. And then basically second guesses himself after he doesn't make it. And touches upon something that Mark said to him earlier, after he meets Mary Jane. He basically says, "Wow, your wife's hot." And then Spider-Man's like, "Wow, you're not surprised?" And then this is probably the only time that another hero's met Spider-Man. It was just like, "No, you're a handsome dude. You seem like you got your life together. It's cool that you got a hot wife." You know, totally believable. And then Spider-Man's like, "You know what? I guess I'm going to go home and watch a movie with my hot wife. Peace." And then takes off.
Yeah, it is, because they want to stay true to that original, like, old Steve Ditko era Spider-Man, where it's like, look at this friggin' nerd. And it's like, okay, look at this dude. He is like a perfect physical specimen. He has an IQ of 200. He's doing fine. Like, on the, just regardless of being already a superhero, he is doing great. Like, just because he's got some bad luck and misses some dates and has some shitty stuff happen to him, it doesn't change the fact that he's kind of got, he's got a lot of stuff handed to him at this point.
The idea, I guess other superheroes giving him a hard time is probably where you can have that happen. But like an average person just being like, "Peter, I don't get why Mary Jane's with you." It's like, dude, shut up. It's just like,
right. Well, other heroes just see him in his silly spider costume and they can make fun of that. So, and that's
right.
Kind
He's
of
a joke at the workplace.
Yeah. Oh my God. I just noticed, because I'm looking at that last panel, the way that Walker draws the spider symbol is bonkers. He's got a little head. Like, I've never seen anybody draw the spider symbol
with
an extra little, like, there's like a little neck and then a head on top. So he looks like a little beetle. Ugh. It's like an exclamation point. That is a weird, not
what is
the
going
right
on
logo.
In this book? What is happening?
Huh. What is going on here?
I bet
they have a week to put this
thing
out.
The weird thing about this one is that, yes, Kirkman was writing this book. Kirkman had been co-writing Marvel Team Up this entire time. So this was part of his baby. But I can't think of an instance where they do a team-up book or a intercompany crossover where you let the Image team come over and do the book. I can't think of a crossover where that's ever happened.
I wonder if they said, it's okay if you come over and do this as long as the art is considerably less detailed than any other issue in the line.
Yeah, it's just weird.
That's my only guess. I mean, it is super weird. But this era, there were a lot of those, because I remember I was subscribing to Marvel Team Up when it was coming out at the time, and they all kind of looked like this. And there were a bunch of Marvel titles that looked like this outside of even the, like I was saying, the Ultimate House style. There were a bunch of, like, you know, they would release things that were Extreme X-Men and things like that, that were just like, here's an X-Men book, but we didn't take much time with it. Okay. I'm the asshole that's like, I want another fucking X-Men book this week, so I'll take the one that you didn't take much time with too. Because whatever, you know, Rogue throws Sauron through a fucking
wall. Well,
it's
interesting,
so
you mentioned that, because I actually, I looked up the week this came out. And so it came out 11/2/2005, and I was curious to see what else hit the shelves that week of note. So keep in mind, this is at a time I realized that Fables and Ex Machina were still coming out. So those were both hitting the shelves that week. Sentinel number one.
I was
exactly.
To be fair, I was also
Sentinel
reading
Sentinel number one came out.
What was it?
The one about the little kid and the Sentinel.
Okay.
Do you remember that book?
Huh.
Remember the kid who, like, he found a Sentinel in the woods and he programmed it, and it was basically like Iron Giant but with a Sentinel.
Oh yeah, my god, yes, I loved that book.
And 11 too.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like...
Interesting. Go ahead. Well, I mean, it feels like this was the era that Grant Morrison's X-Men was going on, right?
But the big thing that came out this week,
like,
was this was the week House of M finished up. So this came out the same time that you get those gorgeous, that gorgeous House of M crossover.
Yeah. But like I was saying, it seems like almost this look was forgiven in the Ultimate Universe, because they already set you up to be like, here you go. All of these covers are these shitty computer graphics. Deal with it. And people loved it. I mean, even to this day, like, Ultimate Spider-Man number one is still a collector's item. The book itself is brilliant, and I absolutely adore it. But those covers were garbage. Were hot, steaming, disgusting, fucking runny garbage. I hated them as much as I can hate anything
that
is just a piece of art. You know, that doesn't
that
have like
Wolverine's
Nazi symbolism
running down the road
in it.
Scraping his claws and there's sparks flying off of it. Yes. Okay.
Yep. That's one. Yep. Yeah, it's all of those that were those like Amiga level computer graphics. They were just like shitty computer covers.
Mm-hmm.
It was boring. And I mean, not only did they not last the test of time, like, you look back on them and they're funny. When they came out, I went, this looks bad. Like, I don't think anybody that looked at it was like, wow, look at the cool new things they can do with computers. Everyone was like, well, these covers are terrible, but the book is great.
Do you
so
remember when they did that
we'll read it.
Spider-Man versus the Lizard all CGI comic? That was atrocious.
Sure do. You know what it doesn't compare to as far as terrible, terrible artwork?
Oh my god.
Batman Virtual Justice.
Holy shit, I forgot
about that. Digital Justice. That might be the worst crime against art that has ever been committed by a comic book. I've never seen anything that awful. And I mean, you talk about Amiga graphics. It was on Amiga. It was like Commodore 64 era. This was done in a time when having a meg of computing power was a big deal. Like, no, you should not have done this. But it's there. And there are hardcovers floating around for a dollar on probably on Amazon that you could pick up and not enjoy at all. Not even not even ironically enjoy. You can probably just go somewhere and see some of the artwork and go, ooh, whoa, huh.
We'll have to do one in the future.
Moving on. Maybe. Yeah, they also, I think they did an Iron Man one as well that was an all computer graphics in a time of very bad computer graphics. I don't remember what the name of that one was, but it's ringing a weird bell, and I can picture the cover. I think it might have been one of the graphic novels, like that all of those like God Loves Man Kills era graphic novels were from.
I'm looking up the X-Men books that came out that week too. So you had X-Men Colossus. This was his miniseries. Yeah. X-Men Colossus Bloodline. I don't know if you remember that. And then X-Men Kitty Pryde.
Oh, dude. This era, do I remember the X-Men of this era? Holy shit. I was buying literally every X-Men book that came out, no matter how
garbage it was.
Surely you
remember X-Men Kitty and Pryde, Shadow and Flame.
Which is sad.
Okay. Because that also came out. So, yeah. Exciting times.
Yeah. Those were some good times for comic books. Man, I mean, honestly, I haven't been excited about the X-Men, you know, until this new reboot, pretty much the way that I was back then. And even now, I'm still avoiding certain titles where I'm like, I don't feel like I need to read everything. I got behind in Marauders and then I caught up and I love it. Marauders is super fun. I think X-Force is a super strong title too. I'm digging like so many of those main titles. Have you read the new
I haven't, no.
Empire crossover with X-Men? You should. That is like one of the most ridiculous, super fun books that I've read in a really long time. It's just Scarlet Witch reanimating all the dead on Genosha to fight plant
people. I'm here for it.
It's a bunch of zombie mutants fighting plants and just, it's awesome.
Nice.
That's fun comic stuff. But yeah, I'm never going to read anything from this era of Marvel team up again. This kind of soured me on it. I liked this issue because I like Kirkman's writing and it's strong and I like Corey Walker normally. But man, this just feels so rushed and so like just it feels so dated to like a 1 year period where like I remember books looking like this and for some reason I remember forgiving it. I remember going, yeah, that's a stylistic choice that they're making. And I was an idiot because now when I look back, it's not a fucking stylistic choice. This is somebody who's being told they have to do 5 pages a day. It's not a stylistic choice. It's we need to pump this shit out. We're going to pay you dick.
And yeah, that's an editorial mandate. Pages. That's what that is.
And yeah, it's just giant piles of corporate crap, which is a bummer. But that said, you know, it's worth checking out if you're an Invincible completist, you've got to read it because it's part of the Invincible storyline.
This was a last minute green flag on Marvel's part to be like, all right, fine, Robert, you can do it. And then he's just like, all right, Corey, we got fucking 2 weeks to get this shit together. But we can get Invincible and Spider-Man together and we can make it work. And I feel like they probably tried their damnedest. You know, and I think if that's the case, if that is truly the story, then kudos to those gentlemen. I think they put together a fun little romp that has its issues. But overall, very like golden agey type crossover. It's just like, hey, what's up? I'm so-and-so, you know, like, let's fight. And then, okay, cool, bye. type of...
Yeah. And actually, that is another thing I wanted to mention that I give kudos to Kirkman again for, is that the way that you do these things and have done them since the Silver Age, whenever these things happen, whenever it's like, hey, look, Superman's showing up and so is Spider-Man. Every one of these fucking books, it's, we're going to fight. I don't like you because of something. You're clearly guilty of whatever because you were in the neighborhood of this bank robbery and we're going to fight. Hey, we have a lot in common. Hey, you seem like you're a nice guy. I bet you weren't responsible for whatever it is that happened. Now we're friends. Let's go fight the thing that's really going on. And they didn't do that. And because literally that has happened hundreds of times in comics. And it's such a cliche that it's almost the only way that they do these things.
Yeah, I think that's what Spider-Man's dialogue addresses, where he's just like, where Mark tells him the whole story of his life, and then he just goes, oh, okay, cool. And he's like, you believe me? And Spider-Man's like, dude, I've seen so much crazy shit at this point. Like, let's just go. It's like...
Yeah. It is, that is the wonder of comics that any of these people would be sane at this point in their lives after the number of times New York has been turned into a fairy tale kingdom.
Shot into the sun
You would think that the entire populace of New York would have such massive PTSD. They would just be wandering around in a fog and nothing that happens. The next time that fucking Atlantis attacks New York, everyone would just go, whatever. And it's like they just kill them off and people would watch them dying and they'd go, yep, it's that. I can't care anymore.
I think it's like I was talking to you one day about how it's just like, how do people still live in Gotham City? There's no way any sane person would still live in Gotham City. There should be no children because no one is raising a family there. It is full of murder clowns, ice people, fucking riddle masters, just crocodile people, bat people, plant people, more clowns.
Yeah. It's like... Once every 3 days, some giant costumed supervillain raises a giant tower in the middle of Gotham and then releases a swarm of something that turns everybody into something. And it's like, guys, there's got to be a suburb, you know, like you could leave.
Right.
You know, like Cleveland is nice. You know, it's nice enough. You could relocate whatever stock market you have to Cleveland. You don't need to put up with like roving gangs of clowns with spiked clubs. It seems like it's not worth it, unless it was Mad Max. Unless Gotham just went full on anarchy, which would be fun. I could see staying there if you know you're rolling the dice and it's just the purge every day. I think logically that's the only
way for Gotham to go in the future.
Yeah. I think that's what they did with Cataclysm. They were like, how about an earthquake hits and then we just go straight into everything's ruined and then we go full demilitarized zone, because it's not making much sense that there are going to be people around here unless they're trapped here.
I just can't imagine a person being like, you know what, guys, I think I'm leaving. I'm out throwing a party. I think I'm going to take a chance in Gotham. I got a really cheap apartment for some reason. I mean, look at these rents. They're so low.
Sometimes you can drink the water. Sometimes it turns you into an angry murdering clown. Who knows? Whatever. It's fine. I use a Brita filter and it tends to take out most of the Joker chemicals. So, you know, get a little giggle here and there, but not the murder clown stuff.
Start the day with a smile.
So that's fine. I don't do any locally sourced fish. I tend to get stuff that's imported. You know, it costs a little more, but again, not murdered by a clown, so that's cool. You know,
I feel like there's a great dry British comedy to be written about just someone living in Gotham. I really do. just someone you're right. Just trying to go, like, literally going to the fish market and seeing that, like, there's like a whole slab of fish, like in Seattle, where they just throw the fish to you, and like they throw him one and it has the Joker face, and he goes, "Oh, no, thanks," and yeah. He throws it back. It's like,
I think you're talking about like an office style, like dry, like straight to camera kind of like yeah. confessional. Kind of I, show, and I think
anyone
I'm into
from
it.
DC is listening to this. After yeah, you get done firing everybody, you should pick up this show.
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
after you put out every single desk that's literally on fire, then
and obviously everyone this. Getting fired is not a joke. Shit. I that's Man, very sad DC. For those people. I think it's awful, but
It is very
sad.
I do think
it's funny that there was a headline from Jim Lee that basically said, "We're still in the business of making comics, for those wondering." And I was like, why do you have to answer that question?
Man. And it's like... Listen... I could go on for a million hours about why this makes no sense that they would fire all of those people and that they would do all of those things. But, you know, it's all been said before, and it's what happens when a bunch of bean counters take over for a creative agency. It's, you know, it's people making insane short-term decisions, not realizing, like, saying, well, you know, we've got the car. Why are we paying for the gas? It's like... Well, it doesn't go anywhere without the gas, you dumb fuck. It's not without these people generating stories, you can't create the content that makes money. Even though the comics don't make money, if you don't have new characters and you don't have new shows and things like that being made, you're not generating the income. And meanwhile, Disney's like, I don't know, the talking raccoon, give him a show. All right, the talking tree, he's got another show. What they can't give away shows fast enough to the thousands of characters that they're creating and nurturing that have failed as comic books. It's like they don't need to make money as comics to make you money as something else. It's an engine. The comics wing of DC is an engine, and they are not giving it the gas that it needs. And that's all I will say on that.
That's me. That's me. I stood up, and then other people started standing up behind me, and then there was more clapping.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a TEDx, thank you for please. Coming to my TED Talk. yeah.
That's me.
You're Jad X. But,
background on that, Portland Pie Company had me in their system as Jad X. Yeah, they heard my
J-A-D
name, Chad Pennell, and then they went J-A-D, which is no human's name. And then last name, they heard Pennell, and they said, fuck it, I'm putting an X.
The 65 Jads that are listening to this podcast just got fed up, threw their iPods on the ground.
Excuse me, my son's also named Jad. All right.
My friend is also named Jad X.
Jad X.
I'm so jealous of that name. I would personally, were my name Jad X, as yours is, I would go get it legally changed. And also, I would get a pair of silver rollerblades, and I would just run around town drinking Mountain Dew.
When I convince the Wachowskis to make Speed Racer 2, I will be Jad X.
Which they should. you want me to start another TED Talk? Get me on why Speed Racer is an underrated film.
I love that movie.
That'll be hours of me explaining why Speed Racer is a genius movie.
Oh my God.
And people don't give it enough credit.
I don't know how many times we watched that. It's a great fucking film.
It is funny and silly. Yeah, it's like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon come to life. They literally made a live action Wacky Races, and people went, "This is silly." Of course it fucking is. You have
John Goodman fighting ninjas.
Ugh.
It's a shame what more passes like for ninjas these days. I'll tell you.
So good. Anyway, my phone's probably going to run out of juice, so I think we should end this right now before
I
die out here. This is, we're doing this a very strange way because Zoom was lagging by like 10 seconds. So we had to do this as a phone call, so we'll see how this works out. But yeah, you can follow us at Coast City Comics Club on Instagram and at Coast City Comics on Instagram. And you can buy your weekly comics from us at CoastCityComics.com. And if you use code ARG, you get free shipping over $30. Everything ships bagged and boarded, and we'll throw in extras and all sorts of stuff. And you should do it because we're an independent company as opposed to a bunch of those corporate douchebags out there that are just ruining everything for everyone. I'm not going to name names, but you know, sometimes.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to name names. I could put myself in actual legal problem with that. So you know what? You know who I'm talking about. Every one of those people.
I was going to say, you're really going for the throat there.
And we'll see
you
next week.
I was surprised. But I was also important note, every time you do get a package, you're also helping to support the U.S. Postal Service, which, yes.
The U.S. Postal Service is in extreme peril right now. And by ordering stuff online, you know, when you get free shipping, I give them $8 in priority mail shipping. And so that's literally a decent sized contribution. When people are like, hey, you know, buy a sheet of stamps, it's like, sure, give them $4 for a sheet of stamps. But also, you can buy something that is from an independent company that's putting money back into Maine if you're a Mainer, or is putting money back into a real community as opposed to going into a multimillionaire's bank account. And you can also help the U.S. Postal Service, which is an incredibly important
thing. There is no Coast City without the U.S. Postal Service. That it would have been gone already if it was not for the U.S. Postal Service.
That is the goddamn truth.
Take that to the bank.
Yep.
All right.
So on that note, take that to the bank. Go be nice to a postal worker tomorrow.
Okay.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Good night, Chad. Bye.